All right, everybody, welcome back. It is the Rob and Stu Show. We're in Sweet 16 territory. Roberto, he's out. He's training diligently. Last I heard, he was throwing up Johnny Walker over in Motel 6 bed. Not good. It's not good, Eric. It's the Eric and Stu Show. Welcome to that. Rob's probably dead. He won't be making it. Unfortunately, you won't get that deep dive into left guards in the NFL draft this week, unfortunately. But Eric's here. It's the Eric and Stu Show, formerly. Sir, welcome back. Eric Haslam Metrics. Good to see you, my man.
Good to be back. I'm ready to talk some Sweet 16. We got the Final Four knocking on the door. It'll be pretty nice. I mean, the whole postseason just flies right by.
Oh, it's just like beautiful.
The regular season.
We got opening day coming up. That's tomorrow, right? Opening day.
Is it already? Oh, my God.
Yes, I'm almost positive opening day's tomorrow. I'm not prepared.
I can't get emotionally vested in that just because the Brewers are inevitably going to either suck or they're going to, you know, get first or second in the division and then just completely die.
It's a rebuilding year.
That's what they say every year. I think it's been a rebuilding year for about 42 years right now for the Brewers, it feels like. Just not
opening
a whole lot
day,
of luck for
opening day is tomorrow, as people hear
this. It is.
I got it.
Interesting.
Yes. And you hate to see all the New York teams, they're all going to get rained out. Hate to see it.
Yeah, it gets that time of year where I get kind of dissatisfied. College basketball ends, and baseball just doesn't do it for me. So I'm kind of like a sports orphan for a little while.
You know what I find is good is if you start deep diving FCS schools in football, there's so much money. You know how much money there is to be made in the CAA, the Southland, the et cetera. FCS football is the same way, but even more so. Football is just a gold mine for pretty much the entire season.
Once college basketball ends, I'm pretty much on cruise control until the NFL draft. I think that's kind of – I'm going to clean my house. That's what I need to do. I need to clean my house.
What you need to do is get a Jaden Reed life-size portrait. Greatest Packer of all time, Jaden Reed. I'm not saying that. Some people are saying that.
Well, my daughter needs a new jersey. She loved Aaron Jones. So now
get her a nice Jaden Reed jersey.
Okay? Maybe that's the way to go next. I know I can't get her a purple Jones jersey. I know that for sure.
No. Can't do that. No. No. And by the way, we're going to have a blood feud this year in NFL because as a Lions fan, I need a victory. You guys don't deserve one. This was the first year that we won the division in my lifetime. So
that went, don't get used to it.
All right, let's start talking NCAA before me and Eric have a fight. Starting off Thursday, we'll go to Arizona Clemson. Big game. I saw the line 7.5. Clemson has certainly outperformed my expectations of them. I know that's a team that we had talked about on this show, and you weren't on it last week, but when we were kind of previewing things, I had made the call out that I thought Clemson was coming into the tournament just absolutely – just and their entire March was not good. Their entire March, momentum-wise, consistency-wise. When you're losing to a scrub school like Boston College by 20, it tells me that something's not right, but yet they come in and they've been dominant so far. This Arizona team is clash of styles. Clemson, much slower. Arizona, obviously faster. To me, it's the Caleb Love show. If he's shooting the rock well, then Arizona's going to go fine. I'm kind of leaning towards Clemson plus 7.5 here. I'd love to get your take.
Well, the analytics also like Clemson in this one. In fact, the spread there is only 6 on that one. And that one is, you know, Clemson was a team that I was kind of talked into You mentioned, or we talked earlier, Eli Hershkovitz. I did his podcast last night. He was one that kind of sold me on Clemson. And his wager was, I think he had a Final Four bet on them, but he also, I think he picked them to win the ACC tournament. Well, that flamed out, obviously. That was an absolutely awful performance. He lose by 21 on a neutral court to Boston College. And so Clemson kind of limped into the tournament a little bit. But the thing I thought of, you know, when it comes to the NCAA tournament, I don't put a ton of stock in conference tournaments. Some teams really put in all effort. Some other teams kind of mail it in. So I kind of look at the NCAA tournament, taking a team that has a lot of experience, a lot of shooters, guys who can score. And just, you know, one of the things that really impressed me was with Clemson was they had a lot of balance. And coming into the NCAA tournament, there was, you know, there were a lot of positive features there. There were solid conversion rates all over. They were able to get to the foul line. They were able to shoot free throws. That kind of fingerprint kind of said there was not a ton of weaknesses with Clemson. On top of that, I don't think Clemson had played their best basketball at that point. And they were getting Jack Clark back. So all of a sudden now you have a, you know, a team that goes in there. And I thought that was a favorable matchup with New Mexico and they blew them away. I thought Baylor, that was going to be a little bit of a problem, but they built up a little bit of a lead and that one kind of gave it up, but held on. The thing about Arizona is I'm still waiting for that other shoe to drop for Arizona. Arizona always seems to have some sort of struggle at some point in the tournament, and they really haven't had that struggle yet. And you've seen them kind of turn it on when they really want to. Obviously, as a Wisconsin fan, I was there witnessing Arizona beat the living bejesus out of us. But you've also seen games where they've dropped the ball. They lose by 8 against Oregon in the Pac-12 tournament. There was the 13-point loss to USC right before the Pac-12 tournament. I'm kind of waiting for that performance to happen. On top of that, I've talked before about how I'm not a big fan of Caleb Love. Long term, I've talked about guys like Terrence Shannon Jr. and Kihei Clark when he was at Virginia. I'm trying to think of some other guys. Demetri Trice for Wisconsin was another one. Guys who are good basketball players, but in crunch time, sometimes they just kind of try to do too much. And this might be that game where all of a sudden, if Clemson builds a lead, Caleb Love is going to try to do too much. And I don't know if that's going to be the best thing for Arizona going forward in this game. I too like Clemson's prospects. I picked Clemson. Before last week, I picked them to go to the Elite Eight to lose to North Carolina. So in this one, I'm probably going to stick with that pick here and say this was the upset I picked. I had Clemson beating Arizona here. I'm going to stick with it. I think Clemson has that fingerprint that they can beat Arizona, and I think Arizona's due for a down game. So.
Demetri Trice, notable for the fact that he's not even close to as talented as his brother. It escapes me where he played at. Probably a really well-known basketball institution and great school. Let's head to UConn, San Diego State. UConn laying 10.5. To me, this is it, correct me if I'm wrong. San Diego State, we've seen them. Another team that's kind of somewhat outperformed what I think they were kind of projected to do. But it's been a Jalen Ledeen show, and I think he just gets neutralized by Klingman or Klingon. And this UConn team is just so stacked, so deep, just suffocating defensively, suffocating offensively. To me, this is a UConn. I could even see laying the 10.5.
I completely agree with you. And the analytics have it just around 10, but I would probably go heavier on the 10. I look at this and go, San Diego State is kind of really benefiting a little bit from the marks they got in that Yale game. I mean, that benefits them to a certain degree as well. I mean, you're playing a weaker team in the second round, you get a little bit of a rest. I mean, you're playing a you know, it's better than playing a full-blown Auburn team at full strength. You kind of, I'm not saying you're getting the day off, but that day they kind of played well enough that they got the day off. They got to rest some of their starters probably because Yale was so bad in that game after beating Auburn. But that being said, San Diego State, if you look at all the teams that are remaining in the Sweet 16, coming, at least this was the numbers as of yesterday. San Diego State was 52nd in the country in offensive efficiency. That's the lowest of the 16 teams right there. That's going to come back to bite them against a team like Connecticut, who's number two in the country in offensive efficiency, number six defensively. San Diego State, a very consistent team throughout the season, which means they play to the expectation. So I like to see this game probably landing pretty close to where you have it, in the 10, 10 and a half range. I'm probably going to lean Connecticut here. I kind of said I sometimes will go against the analytics. If the spread's 10.5 and the analytics are 10, the analytics are saying go with San Diego State here. As much as I like Brian Dutcher and what he's done with the Aztecs the last couple of years, Connecticut is just a different animal. I think at this point, those top three teams really have looked really impressive to me. Connecticut, Purdue, and Houston. I just don't see a lot standing between Connecticut and the Final Four at this point. Maybe Iowa State could give them a run. Maybe Illinois, if they play their best game, can give them a run. I just don't think San Diego State is that team. I don't even think Auburn would have been that team either.
See, I think if Auburn would have made it, I think they would have. They probably, to me, Auburn stood the best chance of giving them a run for their money. But that's just because, you know, you have big men, you have depth. In theory, on paper, didn't work out against Yale, which is one of the more baffling things. I mean, it's just incredible that Auburn lost.
I had it and I crossed it out. I had Yale over Auburn and I changed it on like Wednesday.
How is the bracket? How is the bracket doing?
Really, really well. Considering, I mean, I really got the bottom half. I said the bottom half of the South was going to be carnage, I said. And so the first round winners I had were NC State, Oakland, Colorado, and Marquette. And that's exactly how it turned out. I did have Marquette losing to Colorado. I had Colorado going to the Elite Eight, and that bummed me out because in that game against Marquette, Colorado had their opportunities. They would be down five, then they'd bring it back even. They'd be down five, then bring it back even. And then finally, when they got a chance to go ahead, they had at least three opportunities where you had guys wide open with wide open looks from distance, and Colorado could not convert. And as a result, Marquette won that game. And so I'm not going to get my Colorado team to the Sweet 16, to the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight, but maybe NC State will get there and kind of, you know, keep me up there in the brackets, knock out all those people who had Marquette going that far.
Fair enough. Better than me. I didn't fill out a bracket. I'm not a bracket guy.
No, you're not. Okay.
With gambling, it's just one of those things where it's like, I'd much rather just do, like, I got some buddies that send out, like, you have to pick a player from each, a one seed through a 16 seed. And he gets points based on how well he performs or something. Like, I'll do something like that. But brackets to me are just kind of like, eh.
So yesterday?
Gambling kind of does throw a wrench in it.
Right.
Right.
I'll still do it just in like my friends' pools and things like that. And it's kind of fun. That's kind of the one I root for the most. But I've also got, you know, I wager on every single game in the tournament so far. I've got four futures that I made going as far back as January. And, you know, all my four futures are all still alive in the
Sweet 16. What are your four futures?
I have, I had the first future I made was back in January. The earliest I had was, I think, was North Carolina 21-1. Second one I put in there was, I think it was Duke at 28, was it 24-1? Third one was the big one. That was Gonzaga, 85-1. And then the last one was Creighton, who's the one I'm kind of in my brackets. I've picked to win the whole thing. And I believe that was 28-1. So
I hate Creighton. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it.
Hey, they pulled on my heartstrings in that game against Oregon. Oh, that was tough to watch, but they pulled through.
So I was able to, God bless all the Oregon bettors too, because my God, you should not get blown out in overtime and blow the cover.
Oh yeah,
when you that's just brutal.
I had Creighton covering, so piece of cake. I saw it coming all the way.
It, never in doubt. Never in doubt. Let's be fair. Piece of cake. Piece of cake. but no, I'm with you because on this show, me and Roberto, before he died, we decided that we were going to do North Carolina at 20-1 and Duke at 25-1 for our, you know, to win it all futures. Yeah. And, you know, quite frankly, we'll get to the games here. North Carolina's coming up right next.
Uh-huh.
But the Duke game as well, I think they're both live bets. I really do. I agree with you.
Yeah, I hope so.
North Carolina, laying 3.5 to Alabama. The total in this game, because it's Alabama, you always got to mention the total, 173.5. It's the Charleston, Alabama number. That was at 173.5. I'm always a sucker for Alabama overs. Grand Canyon, a really good defensive team, threw a wrench in their plans. That game went way under. But, Eric, I'm tempted to take the over and North Carolina, even though I should probably be betting Alabama. Small here with our future on the line. What do you think?
Well, 173.5. I mean, man, is that a high number? I mean, just looking at the baseline numbers from the analytics right now, mine is, what is it, 166.5 or 166?
Here's my question, though. When I'm and by the way, I'm using Haslametrics, haslametrics.com. Go give it a whirl. You'll learn something. To me, what's interesting is they've played really only two teams that I can see that are like actually could match the pace in terms of what Alabama's going to offer. And that's Arkansas and Tennessee, but they played them in November. And you got two games that went 159 and 192. So yeah. It's really hard to say exactly what you're going to get here. This might be a game where I don't mess with the total, but I'm certainly leaning North Carolina because this Alabama team is fugazi. This is Rolex watches on 10th Street fugazi.
This one scares me a little bit, and I'm, North Carolina, I have a future on it. I can't go either way on this because I can make an argument either way for Alabama, and I probably will make a wager on this one. It depends on which way the wind is blowing. And I think maybe yesterday I would have thought North Carolina. I'm thinking about this a little bit more today, and I may go Alabama. Here's my way of thinking. Couple things. One of the things I said yesterday was that Alabama really has not faced a defense like North Carolina, and that may be problematic. So, again, I still reserve the right to change my mind, and I've done this numerous times with my brackets last week before I finally, made them official on Thursday. But I look at this both ways. One of them, Alabama has not exactly faced an opponent like North Carolina. I thought before the tournament came around, I said, I cannot wait to see who Alabama is going to be matched up against, because whoever they're matched up against, I'm picking the other team. I'm locked in. And then the committee basically went and gave them Alabama light in Charleston. And I'm like, of all the teams that Alabama could draw, that's the perfect draw for them. I'm like, I can't pick against them in this game. So I decided to say, okay, Alabama's going to get through that first one, but then St. Mary's will get him. Well, St. Mary's never got the chance. St. Mary's crapped the bed against Grand Canyon. All of a sudden, Alabama, I'm not saying he got a free game. Grand Canyon gave him a run, but Alabama gets through that round. From a standpoint now, you're playing a completely different defense, and that doesn't bode well for Alabama. But at the same time, what has Alabama had to go through so far? Sometimes I look at and say the teams that have the easiest road, you have the best opportunities once you get to the Sweet 16. And that's kind of Alabama. They faced a 13 seed and a 12 seed. That's the ideal situation. The other thing is about these teams that have a fingerprint like Alabama. I look at teams that are really, really good offensively and not so great defensively. It's kind of, I've always said, it's kind of like buying a new car. I'm like, if something doesn't break in the first two rounds, are they going to break at all? And I start thinking, Miami last year. Coming into the tournament, 10th in offensive efficiency, 133rd in defensive efficiency. They made it to the Final Four. Can Alabama do the same thing? Well, if Alabama shoots the ball hot and they are making every single shot in the building, that could be problematic. North Carolina's weakness is offense. That's going to be the part where I think they've always kind of had a liability, a slight one. When I say a liability, I mean, come on, going into yesterday.
But it is Alabama, so you're going to get whatever you want.
Right. Right. So North Carolina, 17th in offensive efficiency, 10th in defensive efficiency, really well balanced, really, really good on both ends. But North Carolina never had that elite fingerprint of a national champion. That makes them susceptible, I think. But at the same time, you don't know what you're going to get with Alabama. I've seen Alabama, when the shots are going down, they can build a 15-point lead in no time. If the shots aren't, they're down 15. This is going to be a real tough one. And like I said, I reserve the right to probably change back and forth on this one. I'm not going to really endorse anybody right now, I'm just going to probably go with a gut feel when Thursday comes around, what feels right. And at this point, the more I think about it, I'm starting to get worried a little bit as a North Carolina guy with my favorite, with my future. Just because Alabama, if something bad would have gone wrong, you think it would have happened by now. And you know, I'm not saying, I don't think Alabama has the fingerprint. They don't have what it takes to win a national championship, in my opinion. I'm going to go on record there saying that, but that doesn't mean you cannot beat some one seeds along the way, as we saw last year with Miami.
Yeah, I'm just pulling up Haslam metrics here. Dating back to the 2nd of March, you have a negative offensive efficiency for every game that Alabama's played, except for Charleston, which is,
yeah.
I mean, that was the easiest bet of the entire weekend, opening weekend, I thought, was that game, because Charleston's going to let you run. Alabama's going to let you run. And Alabama just has better shooters, but it's going to be just throw it up at the rim, and where, yeah, something's going to happen. It's a layup line back and forth.
And yeah, and you're looking at some of those, you know, those games coming in. I mean, they were really struggling coming into the NCAA tournament, where they had, you know, the loss to Tennessee by 7. You lose at Florida, get blown out at Florida. They played rather poorly against Arkansas. Then they get beat by Florida again. You know, and then after that, you know, Charleston game, that, yeah, they played well, but then the offense struggled again versus Grand Canyon. The one thing they did well against Grand Canyon is they actually defended well. It was their best defensive performance in almost 2 months.
Well, Grand Canyon was also, I mean, that was a poor shooting performance. Mm-hmm.
Right, right. But even then, for the expectation of that game, they still, Grand Canyon still underperformed in that game. So, yeah, I you know, you wonder. Sometimes I look at this and, you know, the same thought process you had with Clemson coming in the NCAA tournament, there was no reason to believe them. But sometimes you look at these teams that are really struggling and say, are they due for a correction here? When you look at the last 6 performances, as you said, 5 of them are negative. But is Alabama due for a correction offensively? If they're due for a correction offensively and they can play a moderate level of defense, that's a very, very scary team they have there. And that's what worries me as a North Carolina guy with a North Carolina future like me.
I don't know. To me, I think at the end of the day, just watching Alabama all year, this Nate Oates team is not interested in playing any kind of defense. Maybe transition defense, maybe a little bit, because they just want to run. And I think North Carolina may oblige. And look, you know, my Sparties had them in a vice grip very early on. And look, they pissed that game away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was purely due to the shooters and the ball movement and the offense that North Carolina runs. Now, Hubie Davis is, he's no Dean Smith, but I mean, this team is, to me, just very well built. I think they get through.
Yeah, I mean, North Carolina, this was my first future, and this was the team that I said back in January, I'm like, if there is a team that's this year's Connecticut, it's North Carolina. Now, the reason I can't fully endorse them is because, like I said, you got to have that fingerprint of a top 10 offense, top 35 defense. They've got the latter. They've never had the form. They've always been right around 20. Right now, they're at 17. But, you know, like I said, just not good enough. Good enough to be a Final Four team, or even a championship team, for that matter, to get to the finals. I just don't know if they're going to get all the way and win 6 games. That's my concern. I think they have a fingerprint of a team that can win 4 or 5 games. I'm not sure about 6.
Makes sense. Let's wrap up Thursday with, I think, the toughest game of the weekend. I have no idea where this goes. Iowa State, Illinois, the fight in the Illini, getting 1.5. This total is really interesting because – you know, it screams that Illinois is going to win this. 145.5. You on the preview page have this a little bit higher, noticeably higher, about 3 points higher, 3.5 points higher.
For the over under or for the spread?
For the over under.
Oh yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. No, the spread you've got pretty much dead on. The over under, the total here, you have about 3 points higher. It feels like if this is going to be a 145 type game, that Illinois would probably should be favored here. I don't know if you feel the same way. I mean, this is classic offense meets defense. Mm-hmm. Illinois has been really impressive. Going back even to the Big Ten tournament, it just seemed like they've been on a consistent roll. And Terrence Shannon coming back, he's just in a groove right now. What are your thoughts on this game?
It's tough, like you said, but it goes both ways as well. If you look at Iowa State, five straight wins, five straight positive rated performances at my site, most of them in double digits, which means that you're playing well above the expectation. And that's pretty darn good considering that's an Iowa State team that's ranked fifth in the country. I have to admit, it's really hard for me to kind of stick with Iowa State. I don't want to believe in Iowa State, because even before the Big Ten, the Big 12 regular season started, they had one of the weakest schedules out there. And I said, I remember at the time, I was like, Oklahoma, BYU, and Iowa State, which is the team that's going to fade, will all of them fade because they played such weak schedules. But to Iowa State's credit, they were head and shoulders above the other two. And they really haven't slowed down. I mean, what they did against Houston in that Big 12 final was, very impressive, beating them by 28 just to demoralize them. And they really haven't slowed down too much. South Dakota State, they win that game by 17. Washington State, they win that game by 11. Again, it's kind of a little bit with Illinois. My concern is the same concern I have with Alabama, in that it's actually to a certain degree more extreme, in that Illinois is the number one offense in the country. At least they were yesterday. 76th in defensive efficiency. That's actually even worse than Alabama. That concerns me a little bit. So this team is even more polarized when it comes to offense and defense. But like you said, they are rolling. It's really hard to say who's going to take this one. I look at this and I say Iowa State right now, like you said, by about 1.5. I'm probably going to stick with Illinois in this one. I think they keep the streak going. I really am waiting for them to have a pullback performance, a game that has, doesn't deliver. My original concern with Illinois is that they had to win three games in the Big Ten tournament. And then they come back and, I thought they were going to potentially have some problems with Morehead State. That was not the case. They had no problems with Duquesne. They're just kind of on a roll right now. And I'm wondering if there's a pullback game coming?
I should have put more money on it. The Duquesne game, like when you look at the analytics, and the analytics told you everything you needed to know about Duquesne trying to play Illinois. I mean, they just, that was not a contest.
It was not. And it's, it's another tough one just looking at this, just kind of, one of the things that jumps out at me is, and maybe this will make a difference, is that the away from home rating at my site, Illinois is 23rd away from home. Iowa State's 336th. Now that people can say, well, that doesn't make sense. Looking at those last five performances for Iowa State, all those were on neutral courts, which counts away from home. So how is that the case? Well, Iowa State is a little bit inflated because of how successful they were at Hilton. That was the thing. The Hilton magic makes a big difference.
Hilton magic every year makes a big difference.
Right. So you can have that situation I've explained to people, and they say, if you have a poor AFH rating, that doesn't necessarily mean you're bad away from home. It just means you are that much dominant, much more dominant at home. And that was the case with Iowa State. If you look at their game efficiency ratings at Hilton, oh my God, there were some of them that just were rather incredible as far as how much they destroyed people. But I still think that may play a part. That may be the tiebreaker in this situation right here. So if I'm looking right now, and like you said, it's Iowa State by 1.5, and the analytics, which do not take into account the away from home in the raw numbers, have it about the same, I'd probably be inclined to lean Illinois, maybe go money line on Illinois here just because of that AFH rating, meaning that Iowa State's rating is maybe a little bit ballooned because of their home performances. Now they're playing on a neutral court. They've had success on neutral court, but Illinois is rolling as well.
Let's get to Friday. This is my best bet of between Thursday and Friday, and that is Marquette taking on the Wolfpack. Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, taking them all on, laying 6.5. total 150.5. I think Marquette steamrolls them. I think this is a case of we've seen DJ Burns have his way with Trey Townsend and all that. But, I mean, get lit up at the same time, right? And Marquette is just a complete team. This is a complete team, top to bottom. And the name escapes me, but NC State's point guard is a liability to me.
Porcell or?
Yeah. I think he's a liability in terms of how often he's apt to turn the ball over. I know the NC State run was really legit. I think Marquette is – the way things have lined up, now that they're fully healthy, they're the banner school of the state of Wisconsin. That's pretty clear. We know that.
Hey, Wisconsin beat them. Wisconsin beat them.
Okay. Well, you know, we're still looking into that. All right. I remember that because Rob, we were at the Borgata, me and Rob watching that game. Mm-hmm. And Rob put his money on Wisconsin that day. And I was like, you sure you want to do that? And he was, I mean, the biggest Badgers fan.
Yeah.
In the world is Roberto. But yeah, I think Marquette just cruises here, man. I really like this team. It's healthy. It's going. I could foresee them struggling, you know, if they meet UConn again. If they play a team like Duke, I could see them struggling, or Houston per se. But I don't think they struggle with NC State.
No, I think they really lucked out with the draw. And yeah. I mean, there was the chance they had to play Kentucky. Well, they lost that opportunity. You know, they didn't have to play Texas Tech.
They would beat Kentucky too.
I mean, I liked everything with like Colorado State. I thought Colorado was getting through. I thought Florida losing Hanlogton was going to make a big difference, and arguably it did, considering how close that game was. I think they had a battle. As I said, they had a battle with Colorado, but they got through that one. But that's, I still think they're going to have one of the easier roads to the Final Four. Especially with NC State coming up. NC State has been red hot. I mean, when it comes to momentum, they're top 25 in the country in momentum for me. They're just really playing outstanding basketball right now. But that being said, you're always kind of waiting for that regression. Now, the two things that I've always talked about with my doubts of Marquette coming in the tournament, one of them has been kind of quelled. One of them was the health of Tyler Kolek, which was the reason I picked Colorado to beat Marquette. I think oblique injuries have a knack of sticking around. Well, we saw what Kolek did. I think he had 18 and 21 points or something like that in the first two games. He had 11 assists in each game, played a ton of minutes. So obviously that did not affect him. That really bodes well for Marquette. The other question I always have with Marquette, and I say this every year, is the rebounding game. Are they going to be able to rebound them? Those second chances, if the shots aren't falling, are they going to be able to get the second chances? And where NC State excels to a certain degree, they're anywhere from 89th to 56th in the country in second chance points, both on the offensive end and the defensive end, which means they're able to clean the glass effectively fairly well on both ends of the court. Is that going to be problematic for a Marquette team that really does not rate well when it comes to second chances? And they haven't the last couple of years. That's always going to be, you know, I had a debate today with someone on Twitter saying, well, is North Carolina State going to be athletic enough to hang with Marquette? Because Marquette can, the point that was made was, is Marquette athletic enough that they can overcome that and actually get to the glass against a team like NC State? That remains to be seen. But that being said, you know, my thought process is NC State's got a flame out here, don't they? I mean, they've won the last seven games. I'm like, my God, to make the five-game run to get the ACC title, then all of a sudden go back-to-back and beat Texas Tech and Oakland. You got to think their time's up rather soon, don't you think? I mean, so I could – if someone told me that Marquette wins this game by 27, would you really be shocked? I would not.
No, and that's why they're my favorite pick of the Sweet 16 is – I think just Marquette, it's a Marquette cruise fest, and they're on to the Elite Eight. Let's head to Gonzaga, Purdue. Gonzaga catching 5.5, time of taping over under 154.5. These two teams met in November, very early November. And, you know, just looking back at this and doing some research for the game, That was a horrible performance by Gonzaga. And that was right in the beginning of the season, really up until, you know, January, through January. This Gonzaga team, you can see a team going back through the metrics and the analytics, a team that started off really poor, did not have an identity. And watching that Purdue game, I mean, they missed a ton of shots. And you're playing at Mackey, which is not easy to play at. And I think you've got a different team. I think you have got a different ball club coming into this game. Catch them 5.5. I'm not sold on Purdue. I've put that out there multiple times. I'm not a Purdue guy. I think this is a paper tiger here in a lot of aspects. I like the Zags.
Yeah, this is going to be another tough one for me. And to your point about that identity of Gonzaga, they had the loss to St. Mary's on February the 3rd. After that, they were 16-6 at that point. Now they're 27-7, so you played another dozen games. 11 of those games had positive ratings on the offensive end for them. So I had people along the way saying, wow, Gonzaga looks scary, terrifying on offense.
Well, and Eric, to your point about the St. Mary's game, too, being the one aberration when you start looking back the last month and a half of how they've been playing, you know, there's something to be said about, you know, St. Mary's knows how to play Gonzaga.
Absolutely.
They play Mark Few 3 times a year.
Yep, that's right.
Every single year. And so they know what they're getting. They know how to play them, and they're comfortable. I mean, that St. Mary's loss, oof, that buddy. Yeah. I mean, how do you, I'm still not recovering from that one. And I will remember that. I will remember the Gales for that. But I'll tell you, man, this Gonzaga team, like, you know, just looking at, even without your metrics, you can tell this is a different ball.
Oh, absolutely. And you saw that there were a lot of questions about this team up until the game where they played at Lexington and beat Kentucky. That was the kind of the moment that people were like, okay, they're getting in the tournament. And then the thing is, the whole time, even before that, the analytics identified them as a big time under the radar performer. That's why I got 85-1 on Gonzaga about a month ago. And that was a steal. I looked at them like, it's too good to pass up. Even if they can't make it all the way, that's too good to pass up, considering the way they're playing. They had the fingerprint of the offense, the Haslam fingerprint of a national champion, top 10 offensive efficiency, top 35 defensive efficiency. They had that for the last month and a half, and I couldn't pass it up. It was too good of a number to pass up. Now, the question is, you know, and this is going to be kind of the ongoing story with Purdue. How are the referees going to call this game again? Because you've seen it time and time again. How many guys, you know, how many guys are in the hopper for Gonzaga to throw at Zach Edey? Because you know Zach Edey is going to get people in foul trouble time and time and time again. So you look at the guys on the roster, and who's Gonzaga going to line up? Is it going to be, who are you going to start with? I assume it's going to be Graham Ike, 6'9", 245. He's going to get his two fouls in the first 10 minutes, probably. Then what are you going to do? You're going to put Anton Watson on him. You have Braden Huff. You have Ben Gregg. You have these key contributors, all these guys averaging over 9 points a game, but big enough to potentially guard Edey. It's going to be interesting what they're going to do with him, if they're going to double down, if they're going to dare the Braden Smiths and the Fletcher Lawyers and the Lance Jones to actually make their three-pointers. I don't know if that's going to be Few's tactic here, but, you know, it just seems to me it's the game of attrition with Zach Edey. Is how many guys do you have in the hopper that you can throw at him, knowing that he's just going to get you guys in foul trouble? Unless, of course, you can somehow get the referees or manipulate the referees somehow to get two quick fouls on Edey. I think you saw that a little bit with Wisconsin in that Big Ten tournament game where they got Edey in a little bit of foul trouble early. They got a technical foul on him, and all of a sudden he had two fouls early and he had to sit. That made a difference in that game. It kind of takes away that advantage, that obvious advantage. I used to say and joke around, and Purdue fans won't like this, but I said, if you take away Zach Edey from Purdue, they're basically Nebraska. Now Purdue fans are going to hate me for saying that, but that's kind of the way I feel. I mean, but that's how much of a difference Zach Edey makes. And he is the cornerstone there. So you have to find a way to manipulate that, or else get the referees to make the calls that benefit you. And that's going to be a tough call, because I don't know how the referees are going to make this game. From a future standpoint, obviously, I'd like to see Gonzaga continue. That'd be very lucrative for me. But at the same time, I've said this Purdue team feels kind of like a team on a mission right now, a little bit like Virginia from 2019 after they lost their opening round game the year before. It's hard to bet against them right now. It's really difficult. I like Gonzaga a lot. I'm going to be really intrigued to see what they do. But Edie has just been getting all the calls going back the last few weeks. If that continues, I think it's going to be really hard to unseat them here.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, Purdue fans, they are, they're one of the worst in the Big Ten. I mean, I'm just putting that out there right now. The Boilermakers, I mean, how long are you going to live off Jeff Tedford and Drew Brees went to my school. That was 30 years ago almost. So let's calm it down.
Yeah, you get all types. I mean, that's the thing. I got some good Purdue followers, and then I've had other ones that are, I mean, it's the same with any other school system. Like I say, I always write on my site that Homerism is a disorder. I'm like, I got no problem with you rooting for a team. Obviously, I'm a Wisconsin fan, but, you know, I've gone to games with friends, and you see the Homers there that will boo everything that goes against the Badgers and cheer for everything that goes in their favor. And sometimes the people are booing, and I look at my buddy, and we're looking back at each other, and we're like, it's the right call. It went against the Badgers. It was the right call. And he got 20 people behind me screaming their heads off, booing. And I'm like, that's why I said Homerism is a mental disorder. You know, it's fine being a fan of your team, but, you know, the calls don't always go to your direction. And I will never, ever complain about foul shots. My favorite topic. Oh, I roll my eyes the most. That team got 37 free throws and we only got 21. There's a reason for it usually. And it's a legitimate reason. The referees are not against you.
What I always say is fourth best school in Indiana. So we'll leave it at that. We'll move on to another really exciting game. If the Iowa-Illinois game, or Iowa State-Illinois game, excuse me, sorry, Hawkeyes. That game is to me the highlight game for Thursday, Friday. It's got to be Houston-Duke.
Mm-hmm.
Dukies, I'm right there with you. I'm rowing the boat with the Dukies future. I think they match up really well with Houston. Houston coming in with some guys banged up. And really, they should have lost that game to Texas A&M. I did have a little sprinkle of Texas A&M money line. I bought down the line quite a bit. Got plus six and a half.
See that at the top right there? A&M.
Yeah.
That bummed me out.
I was waiting. Eric, I was waiting. I was like, man, if I can get Texas A&M Houston in the second round, I'm firing.
Yeah.
And you missed 20 free throws. So, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Terrible. Terrible.
Yeah.
But Duke has, you know, the analytics have Duke by, or I have Houston by about 3.5. That's compared to Vegas, that's what is Houston favored by right now? 4. It's about the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm
seeing some 4.5s out there, which I think is we're starting to trend towards Duke value here.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And you know, I've always said that defense wins games. Offense wins championships, and Duke has that fingerprint of a national champion. Houston does not. 21st in offensive efficiency. It's good, but it's not great. And that's the thing, right? I think you have to have a really great offense to win the national championship. I think Duke has the higher ceiling as well. If you remember going back into the preseason, a lot of people had Duke being the number one team in the country. And so I look at that and go, that means to me that they had the highest ceiling of anybody in college basketball. Now, have they played up to that ceiling? Certainly not. But if you look at the talent they have there, they can match up with Houston. On top of that, Houston is, you know, they're dealing with potential depth issues. I know that they got Ramon Walker back, which I didn't think he was unlikely to return, but sounds like he came back for that last game. But that being said, I'm still not a believer that Houston has what it takes to get to the Final Four. I'm still doubting them. And that A&M game, I thought A&M had it. That would have been great for me because I had A&M winning that game. But Duke has the higher ceiling. And the one concern that I have a little bit with Duke is I know Caleb Foster was going to be a contributor, and he's out now. He's not going to play in the NCAA tournament. But that being said, they still got the bodies. They still got Roche. They still got Filipowski. They still got Proctor.
Well,
They
and
still,
what's
I mean,
interesting too is that McNeil's come on pretty
yeah,
strong for
right.
Duke. And if you've been watching Filipowski, he's been kind of like just a decoy the first two games. He hasn't really gotten involved. And Duke has shown the ability to score and score efficiently without Filipowski. I think he had like 2 points in the Vermont game. Like,
Yeah,
I
something like
mean,
that, yeah.
yeah, he has been pretty much on the side of a milk carton, but setting screens, drawing defenders off the ball, and the fact that Duke can score without him and be really efficient about it, it makes me want to take Duke,
Yeah.
especially if I get a five. If this can float up to five, which Lord knows it probably won't, but if it can float up to five, I'm going to be with Duke.
I may go money line. I may actually go all the way money line on Duke in this one. And it's just sometimes I'm going to take that when I get that gut feeling and go, I think this team that outright wins this game. Even though they're getting the five, it just kind of feels like right now that would probably be the way I would go. That's how much I believe in Duke, and Duke is my Final Four team coming out of the South. Now, granted, I had them beating Colorado in the Elite Eight. I did not anticipate Marquette getting through. I mean, maybe they still won't. They still got to beat NC State, but I still think Duke has the best potential to come out of this region.
I think a Duke Marquette matchup would lean towards Marquette.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably so, but I think the ceiling, the highest ceiling there is still leans toward Duke. And one of the things I've always said is I look at like think of like last year, Arkansas. Arkansas was a great example last year's tournament where they were an eight seed. That Arkansas team was way better than an eight seed, but they never performed up to their level. That's why they were an eight seed. But all of a sudden they got to that second round and they handled Kansas in that second round game. I'm always a believer that some of these teams that just don't hit their ceiling, all of a sudden they do in March. And then a lot of people who do hit their ceiling throughout the season, cough, cough, BYU, all of a sudden they melt under the hot lights because it's a different ball game
Well,
in March.
and that's a great lead into the last game of Friday, because BYU is a heavy, heavy 3-point variance team, and that's why I took Duquesne in that game.
So did I.
Creighton +2.5 against Tennessee, over under 143.5, and I'll tell you, this Tennessee team, don't connect, has been, and to my mind, struggling a little bit. They got a little lucky to get past Texas. I thought Texas matched up really well against Tennessee. They barely got through. If Creighton's hitting their threes, they're gonna have issues. But I don't know. I just that Creighton game where they're not hitting their threes is coming, and I don't know if it's against Tennessee, who is going to, let you take your shots. This isn't Rick Barnes from 3 years ago. This is Rick Barnes now when Tennessee runs. I'm curious, do you still feel strongly about your Creighton? Noted Jays fan. How do you feel about Creighton?
I think Kalkbrenner disappeared for a big portion of that game against Oregon. I don't think I think Kalkbrenner is going to perform. This is a hot take because Adu and Josiah Jordan-James are quality defenders on the inside, but I think the bulk of Dante really gave Kalkbrenner fits, and I think that was a problem for him. I don't think he's going to necessarily have that problem here against Tennessee. I think he plays a better game in this game against Tennessee. The other thing is I thought Ashworth was pretty awful for a while in that game. He could not hit anything until finally in that overtime session, he finally got hot. One of the things I'll say about Creighton and Tennessee, or about Creighton, is I thought it would happen in the first round. I thought Creighton might get a test from Akron. They did not. In fact, it was the second round game against Oregon. They got it. But I think sometimes those games that really test you can really be a benefit in the long run. I think they've been scared straight to a certain degree. And now they will focus and play a much better game. One can make the same argument for Tennessee. Tennessee had a heck of a ball game against Texas. I kind of expected that going. In fact, and that was one of the games I went back and forth on. I ended up picking Texas to beat Tennessee. I was wrong in that one. But Oh my God. I mean, when it comes to this one, this could be a tight game. It's my youngest daughter picked Tennessee to go all the way. I picked Creighton to go all the way. So we have a little rivalry in our own house. But with Tennessee, I could see them a little bit like Arizona. They're a little bit snake bitten, and I'm kind of waiting for something bad to happen. And like you said, they're good offense, but they're not the greatest offense in the world, 25th in the country in offensive efficiency. Creighton, 10th in offensive efficiency, 32nd in defense. They have that championship fingerprint. Tennessee, very elite defensively, no doubt about it, but offensively, will they fall asleep again? That's typically what you've seen in the past from Tennessee. A little bit different now because Dalton Kincaid is that offensive alpha that they've lacked for several years. That being said, it's a tough call. I'm going to lean for Creighton just because I think they had their off game, and I think they're due for a really big one coming here against Tennessee. But that's just a gut feeling on that one. I could definitely see Tennessee taking this one by double digits, or going either way for that matter. It's a tough call.
Is it fair to say Tennessee's a little bit like Michigan State in the sense that analytically their defense is better than what you see on the court? Because I just watching Tennessee this year, I've not been, I think because they pushed a faster pace over the season, it has, historically the Tennessee has been a bear defensively, but this year, it seemed like a faster pace took away some of that defensive efficiency, even though the analytics, I know, same with Michigan State. Michigan State, analytically, defensively, and we've talked about this in the past, really good numbers wise, really good numbers wise. But what you see in real life is just like, the numbers, you should be better on defense than what I'm seeing on my TV. Well, before I break the TV, but you know what I'm saying.
And I look back at this and I kind of go back to, again, there's a reason I put a future on North Carolina. There was a reason I put one on Duke, and there's a reason I put one on Creighton, because when you watch certain things about these teams, something just lights up and you see it and you're like, this team has it. This team just has it. I never quite got that feeling this year from Tennessee. They had their moments and they looked really good in several situations. I just never had that feeling that they had that championship caliber team. Creighton kind of had it. My only concern with Creighton was always going to be a couple things. One of them was going to be depth. If they, I think Jason Green has stepped up quite a bit. I think that's great for them. And then a lot of people say, are they a little bit too live by the three, die by the three? Well, I think that's one of the things you kind of had, that people said the same thing a few years ago about Villanova. And look how that turned out for them. Pretty good for a couple of those years. I kind of think of the same thing with Creighton. That's one of the things I look for on a team. I'm looking for experience and I'm looking for solid shooters, people who can beat you with a three pointer. So if you're, a team that can't shoot the three, if you're falling down by 10, how quickly can you come back? With Creighton, I have faith that they can dig themselves a hole and dig out of it with just pure shooting. They have that ability. That's one of the reasons I like Creighton. So I'm probably going to stick with Creighton here in this situation. I know that the analytics have Tennessee by, a little less than 2 points, but in this case, I'm probably going to stick. I'm with my future. There's a reason, and there were a future. I'm going to stick with it. Stick with the girl you brought to the dance, I guess. That's kind of what I'm doing with the Blue Jays here. And so I'm going to probably take Creighton in this one to beat Tennessee.
Last question. Going to put you on the spot here, Eric. Give me your three best bets for the Sweet 16.
Three best bets for the Sweet 16. God, that's gonna be a tough one.
I'll lead it off. You can make fun of me if you want.
Okay.
I'm going Connecticut,
That's my first one. That's my number one.
Marquette, and I'm gonna take gosh, third one. I think I'm gonna take UNC.
Interesting. Well, those first two I like. I'll probably agree with you on those first two with Marquette and UConn. The third one, oh
Probably
man.
Creighton, no.
I'm actually, so here's where I'm leaning. I'm leaning Clemson. I'm leaning Clemson for my third one. The other one, I reserve the right. Like I said, I'm changing my mind on this. I'm curious to see where Alabama and North Carolina lands at the very end. The problem is, I think people are going to put too much money on Alabama. and it's not going to get to the point where I'm gonna bite on it. It's North Carolina by four, which is pretty close to what I have. If that got to North Carolina by five or five and a half, I'd be really tempted to go Alabama on that one. But I don't know if it's I'm talking myself into Alabama, and I don't want to be doing that probably, just because I think at some point they don't care about defense, and but you know their offense is so goddamn potent. It's tough to pick against them. But I'll probably stick with Clemson being my third pick for the Sweet 16.
Beautiful. Folks, good luck this week, Sweet 16. Roberto, if he's alive, he will be back. He'll be talking right tackles in the draft. If you ever wanted to know the right tackle situation at William & Mary, he's your man. He'll break down all that position group or some position group this week on his draft show. Until then, Eric, where can the good people find you on the Twitter sphere and proprietary HaslamMetrics.com?
Yep. On the internet, you can find me at HaslamMetrics.com. I got all my ratings, my rankings, my bracketology done for the year now, but all my projections, as well as automated team and game summaries. Otherwise, if you want to find me on Twitter or X, I am out there going hashtag analytically final at HaslamMetrics.
Yeah, the analytically final has made me sad a couple times already. But, you know, it is what it is.
It happens.
You know, you try to break the news early.
The sun rises in the east tomorrow morning.
By the way, just low-key, the craziest thing that I actually took Chicago State money line the other day, and that's not a phrase I thought I would ever.
I was going to say. Oh, my God. Well,
they
you should have done
beat Fairfield.
Well, you should have done it against Northwestern is what you should have done. Back earlier in the year.
Yeah, earlier in the year. Earlier in the year. Chicago State's not a bad team.
No. I mean, to their credit.
I would ever be saying that.
To their credit. I mean, yeah, they've dug themselves out of the doldrums. They are no longer even, I don't even know if they're on the last page for me anymore. I mean, now it's up to Mississippi Valley State to climb out of there.
That's never happening. And on that sad note, we will see you next time here on the Eric and Stu Show. Until then, take care, brush your hair, and we'll see you after a while.